Welcome to the Female Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast. This podcast is actually a spinoff of a Facebook group. My name is Sharon McLaughlin. I created that Facebook group for female physicians so that they would have a place to come and learn about business, to network, and to grow. And we've done just that. So if you're interested, take a look at our show notes for our website, as well as a direct link to the Facebook group. This podcast is going to be about everything business. So let's listen along as we hear about tips to help grow our business. Before we get started, let me mention Builderall. Builderall Foro will launch on October 1st, 2020. It is an all-in-one platform. It is where I host my website, my courses, our summit that we had. I put my podcast episodes on that. I have my sales pages, my landing pages, all my webinars. There's a booking app. There's a magazine editor. You name it, they have it. Everything that you can possibly want for an online business is there on that platform. So if you need help building a course, reach out to me. There's also links down below as far as a free trial, and also $1 for 30 days, you get to try all the tools. All right, guys, I'll see you on that platform. Let's get started with our episode. In today's episode, we speak to Dr. Lula, also known as the Mometrician. She's a former Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force. Dr. Uchenna Oma is a Nigerian-born, board-certified pediatrician, a global speaker on youth suicide prevention, a three-time best-selling author, and a mother of three. She is the CEO of Teen Alive and Dr. Lula's Youth Health Center, both dedicated to at-risk youth and youth suicide prevention. Her public speaking career followed a suicide attempt by a 7-year-old patient and suicides of colleagues and a patient. She is a United Nations and 2020 TEDx speaker, TV personality, and freelance writer. Her work has been recognized by the Nigerians and Diaspora Commission of Nigeria and the Texas State House of Representatives. She has been featured in the Washington Post and Parents Magazine, and has been interviewed by the History Channel. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today. I wanted to introduce one of the physicians in the Female Physician Entrepreneurs Group. Her name is Dr. Uchenna Oma. She does a lot of work with physician suicide, just suicide in general. And it's a really hard topic to speak about, but it's a topic that we do need to speak about. And she's brought a lot of awareness into this situation, which I'm thrilled to see. And I'm so happy that you're doing this work. It's an honor to have you on the show today. So tell me, with your background as a physician, how did you get into this work? You know, what happened?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm so glad you said that. The one question that I tell patients' parents to ask is not why, is what happened. So I'm glad you said that. But present continuously, what's happening might be better if a child is actively still being bullied or whatever. But I love that you said what happened. So in my case, I'm a pediatrician. So naturally, you know, I take care of kids age 0 to 23. I mean, no biggie, penicillin for strep throat, whatever. Everybody's happy. But in the year 2000, I had a friend of mine who was 20, she was 34. She was a surgical resident. And I was 7 months pregnant with my middle son. And I usually have his picture somewhere here just because. And don't you know, I was 7 months pregnant and I just kept, her spirit kept coming to me to call her and ask and just ask how she's doing. But I didn't, because I was like, oh, I'm pregnant, whatever excuses that we give for not checking up on people. And I didn't. And then finally one day I was like, that's it, I'm going to call her. And her niece said, oh, and so blew her brains out 2 weeks ago, were her exact words. Her niece was 16 then. And her mother heard the words and grabbed the phone and, you know, said, I apologize. And said, I don't know who you are. I don't even know. So I told her who I was. We did our residency, our housemanship together in Nigeria. And I've just been in that mindset of wanting to call her. And I guess I didn't get a chance to. So that happened, and then I went into labor with my son like within a day or two because I was devastated. I just felt so guilty. Like, we were not best friends, but I felt like there was a reason, has of all the people that needed me to call them was her, and I didn't. Needless to say, one of the things I say to them, to people now, is don't text, call. Call consistently. Let that person say, you know what? Okay, I'm going to pick up the phone. Because you never know what that phone call might do. But I never called her. And then I had the baby. He was, you know, 7 months. Weighed, I don't know what, came out bouncing out 6 pounds. We're like, are you sure he was a preemie? But of course he was. He acted like a preemie. And then, you know, that kind of came and went. Then I had a 15-year-old patient in 2008 coming to see me with his mother. He was an only son, and she had two kids, one boy and one girl. And she was like, he's a school quarterback. I don't know what he thinks is, who he thinks he is. He doesn't want to play football anymore. I want you to talk some sense into him because I know he loves football and, you know, maybe he's on drugs. Can you check him for drugs? Needless to say, his drug screen was negative, but his PHQ-9, he's got a 23 out of 27. And a PHQ-9 for non-doctors is a modified depression scale that was screening that we use for children. We ask 9 valid questions that have to do with how you're doing, you know, but the 2 of those questions that have you had thoughts of killing yourself or that you're better off dead, I think is how it's worded in the last 7 days or in the last 1 year. Obviously 1 year, but 7 days, okay? So both of them were yes for him. And I drew her attention to that. And, you know, as gently as I could, I said, I think it might be a bit more serious than just he doesn't want to play football, but he's 15. And his mother, being the caregiver, said, well, if it's just the depression, because the screen is called depression screen. Now, of course, I know about the Columbia suicide scale. I mean, this is later on, but then that's all I had. She was like, if it's just depression, that's cool, because I had depression and his sister had depression and my mom has depression and we're all doing okay, so it's going to be fine. And, you know, I never saw him again. Now, that was in March, in July, that year, 4th of July of that year, during the family barbecue. He literally stood in front of the lawn and put a double barrel shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And when she came to see me, I've seen a movie before that can describe what I saw or didn't see. The lights were out, like literally her lights were, she was just a shell. I cannot unsee that, right? I don't think anybody can ever unsee what I saw that day. I don't want to ever see that again. But even with that, I didn't really pursue the suicide yet until I had a 7-year-old boy come to see me in 2018. So that was 10 years later. He has a history of ADHD, and his mom brought me to see him because she said he's tried to kill himself twice. I'm like,
So young, 7 years old.
Yes, ma'am. She said he used a pillowcase the first time and then used a computer cord the second time. I specifically named those because I know most people don't want you to say the mode. I do because it's the work that I do, but more importantly, because people think you need a gun in your house. You don't. Majority of kids that I've studied will use a jump rope, a belt, or of course, majority of them will use, I mean, enough of them will use a jump rope or a belt, but majority of them will still use a firearm. That is true. So if you can take out the firearm, 1 out of 4, great. But I'm just saying to you as a parent, don't say, okay, phew, we got rid of the firearm. One of my colleagues that killed himself 5 years ago, a Nigerian gentleman, didn't use a firearm. He was in the kitchen. He's an anesthesiologist. And use his wife's steak knife. So when I say that when people have made up their minds, they will find a means. And so the lethal combination for suicide is the thoughts and the means. I have had suicidal thoughts. They were very, very real. My means was my car. I was going down the highway. I had no seatbelt on. I had my convertible rooftop down. I was going at 85 to 95 miles an hour, and I was just looking for the space. I wanted to make it look like an accident, and I did not want to survive. This is me speaking. So a means makes the suicide complete. And so what we want to do is avoid getting to the suicidal thoughts, of course, but more importantly, avoid the means by discussing, by making the conversation open so that your, you know, your children, like I have a 16-year-old, he'll be 16 years old in 2 days. I have to bring up conversations like that. And it's not a dinner table conversation, but it might as well be if I can save his life. But more importantly, when I was trying to draw up my youth suicide prevention course, I asked my kids, I asked people, I said, you know, if you were in that class, what would you like to know? And people, you know, the doctors asked about, you know, chemical dependency and all the things that parents ask. This 16-year-old son of mine asked me the question that made the difference. He said, if my friend is suicidal, how would I know? And I thought to me, oh my goodness, thank you, because I need the kids to also know what to look out for in their friends. And it was the same child who, after my 7-year-old patient came to see me with his mother, the same one I was talking about earlier on, I came home that day and I was buzzed. I looked like I had, he said, Mom, you look like you've seen a ghost. He's very intuitive and very into my energy. And he came and patted me on the back and said, how was work? I mean, because usually he asked me how was work. He said, but today you look like, I said, dude, I feel like I saw a ghost. He said, what happened? He was 11 years old. And I said, this is what happened. And I don't know. He said, well, Mom, what are you going to do about it? I said, I honestly don't know what I'm going to do about it. And then he now took a deep breath. I said, you know, you can come and speak at my school. Maybe if you can talk to the kids. Bingo. And I was like, I will come talk to the kids. And that's literally how this work was born. But I would have still been a regular pediatrician going to work every day, except that I went to my superiors where I was working then, and I pitched this idea. I said, I had this kid come see me and I can't sleep for wanting to make sure that that doesn't happen to anybody else's child. And it took them 3 weeks of deliberations to come back and tell me, no, we can't give you a day off to go speak at schools. We need you here every day. So I literally didn't even think about it. I was just like, I'm going to put in my resignation today. And of course it takes 3 months, but I didn't look back. I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything, but I had a determination that my son keyed into another child. You see, that's the thing about kids. They key into each other. And so a lot of times parents want to be the ones to know what's going on with their child. I tell you to ask their friends. Their friends, if they're honest, because most of the friends, the kids would say, don't tell my mom, please promise you won't tell my parent. But as a parent, if you can key into that child and tell the child it is about the life and death of your best friend, sell it to them. They will say, well, you know what? A couple of days ago, I mean, he did try to give me his favorite ex. One of the things that kids would do is they start giving away their favorite prized possessions. And so my son, if he ever comes home with his friend's ex, I always say, wait, who gave you that t-shirt? Did you say that's his favorite sweatshirt? Why is he giving it to you? You know, or whatever, something like that. I want to know. So get comfortable with being nosy about your kids and their friends and their business, right? And yes, I know we all want to be private and all that, but do have access to your kids' phones. I do. I mean, the two oldest ones now are in college and graduate school, so maybe not anymore, but the baby, I still have my way around that. I say, I ask him questions about what's going on and what's the latest buzz in your chat room. And then one time he said, oh, there's this kid who has Tourette syndrome, who everyone is making fun of him. So I said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I mean, it's none of my business. I said, no. You're telling me this because it's your business. And so what did we do? Me and him together drafted a nice response to the other kids making fun of the kid with the Tourette syndrome. And so I want people to empower their kids, because you can be everywhere. But the truth about children and suicide is the triggers are usually within about 100 feet from where the child is standing, i.e. bullies or their parents, or in my case, a trusted neighbor. Somebody is betraying their trust consistently. And then some parents, since the COVID, you know, there's been, you know, obviously financial stress, which literally converts into parents are stressed out, and therefore the house becomes toxic. And so there's been an increase in divorce. My wife was telling me just yesterday, she said, oh my goodness, 90% of the phone calls that I'm getting our divorce cases. She works customer service with the electric company. And she says 90% of them are getting new apartments and they're all divorce cases. And this is her 50th year on the job. And this is the first time she's getting 90%. So you and I know it's COVID related. And so I want to say that because it brings me to the number one reason why people kill themselves. Everybody wants to call depression and mental illness for an okay reason, but I don't accept. I don't accept it because it's not true. The number one reason, 48% of people that kill themselves is relationship problems. And that will make you see why a child who is being bullied at school is a relationship problem. Now, if you bring that child to come see me and I don't have enough time to dig into everything else, the first thing I'll say, well, he has symptoms of anxiety. Well, let's put him on an anxiolytic, or let's put him on some Prozac because his mother has a history of depression. But now what if we went a little, just a little bit deeper and found out that his mother's depression is because of a toxic marriage or a toxic work relationship? And it's coming down generationally to the child. So there's toxicity around the child. And with the kid is also being bullied at school because he goes to school every day looking down. And then someone is like, well, why you always got to look down? And then let's start calling him the downer or start teasing. You know what I mean? And you can now see how, if you scratch the surface a little bit, we'll get to 48%, which is as of 2017, the WHO and the CDC put out the numbers out there. The number one reason is 48% of people who kill themselves is toxic relationships. Then financial problems, you know? Then chronic illnesses. Believe it or not, mental illness makes the cuts, but barely at number 4 or 5. So going back to doctors and why any of us at all, you can see how we are extremely stressed out. Our work is by nature stressful. We have to put on this facade of, I got this. Even when I was going to, I had a 6 month of active suicidal behavior. I was commander in the US Air Force. I walked with a perfect commander stride. I was at the head of the meetings. I was the medical director at Lackland. Everything was okay. But inside I was dying. And so one day I was like, you know what? I don't want to pretend anymore. There's no use. It's not because I didn't have enough cars or enough shoes or enough bags or I didn't love my kids. I was just, I had rejected my own self because as a doctor, if I open my mouth and say, I need a timeout, I need a mental health day. What? Your license? Oh my goodness, are you impaired? But if a bank manager says, I need a mental health day, they give the CEO his mental health day. If a barber, a hairstylist says, I can't come in today, I'm not doing so good, it's okay to reschedule all of the appointments and she goes to get help. If a doctor mentions those words, first of all the other doctors are like, what, you think you're the only one who's stressed out? So we are not really helping each other up. And then at work, I don't know, doctor, so-and-so, let's have a meeting about this. You know, we don't want our patients to get scooped. So we're going to sever ties. You know, all of those things. Or the doctor knows what, I don't know, Parkinson's is like, or what brain tumors are, and has been diagnosed with a brain tumor. So doctors are particularly very vulnerable population. And I just counted number 15 with the cardiologist from last weekend since the COVID. And that's for the ones that I know. I don't know how many more are out there that are not known, because most people, I know myself that if I had killed myself, if I had succeeded in driving off the highway, my children would probably never have known it was a suicide because it would have looked like an accident. Somebody somewhere will say something about, well, maybe she was intoxicated. Why was she driving so fast? Maybe they will plant something in my autopsy and call it an intoxication. Well, why was she intoxicated? Well, you know, the last time I saw, I don't drink. I've never drank a day in my life. I'm just saying that they will find reasons before they will go for suicide. And I know my father, will never accept that his child died of suicide. So we see why it becomes this vicious cycle. We don't want to talk about it. There's shame, there's stigma, and then of course there's silence, the three deadly S's that produce suicide. So what I want us to do is to stop with the fifth S, with the silence already, with the shame already, with the stigmatizing someone who's asking for help. And it's hard enough to ask for help. But what happens is we have to go back to our inner child when we were toddlers. Mom, 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 I need help. Very easy, right? And mom comes, yes, little boy, what's going on? Oh, you've got a little boo-boo. And we kiss it and make it better. And then a 16-year-old says, mom, I need help. You're like, what do you mean? You're 16. You know, you're old. I mean, oh, how dare you, you know, think you can't do that or whatever. Maybe they're judgmental or want them to grow up too fast or want them to be more in charge. And so what that does is the child effectively doesn't come to you again and maybe starts cutting or maybe finds a gang or a group of kids who are truants or starts drinking. Something will usually, and it usually starts with a betrayal somewhere. So I want us to look at it with just a different pair of eyes. It is easy to say it's depression. So what I say is I give you depression, but I give you a depressive crisis is the ultimate pathway. But an antidepressant per se as an entity will not fix if my ex-husband and I got divorced and that's the reason why I'm depressed. It will not fix it if I was being molested like I was as a 9-year-old, I was sexually molested. It will not fix that because I probably won't tell you. I just say nothing, nothing. Well, why are you acting that way? I don't know. Well, let's try her on a low dose antidepressant. Well, I'm not going to tell you because I've just been violated. And so I want doctors to just take a deep breath real quick before you prescribe. And in America specifically, where in the last 4 years, suicide rates have tripled. And in the same 4 years, prescription strength antidepressants have quadrupled. Unless it's my math, it doesn't add up. But wait, antidepressants have a black box warning and it can cause suicidal ideation. And so I had a guest on my podcast recently who is a child and adolescent psychiatrist who said, and I quote, if your suicidal behavior is not caused by clinical depression, antidepressants will not prevent you from suicide. And I thought, oh my God, that's a summary of what I've been trying to say. But he's a psychiatrist and he can say that. So I plead with us to be more gracious with each other and be more compassionate with each other and give each other just a little bit more room to try to figure out what the world has become. There's fires, there's demonstrations, there's police brutality, there's racism, there's domestic violence, there's child abuse. It doesn't look like it's getting any better anytime soon. So time for us to just kind of just do some introspection because ultimately the one person you can control ultimately is you. And when it comes to youth and teenagers and college kids, my kids call me every week. The middle son checks in on Saturdays. The eldest son checks in on Sundays. We just have just me and mom phone conversation. How was your week? What are the highs and what are the lows? And I have that open door policy for them to hopefully, I pray that they will be comfortable enough to tell me. And one of mine, my eldest son, when he was at Stanford, he struggled a little bit. He said, mom, I have the least, the tiniest bit of suicidal. He didn't even know how to say it. And I was, oh my God, thank you for saying it. And I said, what you said, what happened? And it turned out that he had 21 course units or whatever, the number of max, he maxed out on the course load. He's in California, I'm here. His parents are divorced, so he's estranged from his father. He's trying to make new relationships. And it's all a bit too much for a poor little 18-year-old. He just turned 18 in May. So It is easy. That's why one of the highest rates of suicide is in college kids, and therefore medical students and residents. And the age range is 10 to 34, where suicide is second only to accidents. However, most people make their suicide look like an accident. So which really comes first, the chicken or the egg? And so I will argue that suicides are the number one cause of death for kids aged 5 through 34. I say 5 because the youngest child that died by suicide in the world was a 5-year-old Chinese girl. The youngest in the U.S. were 2 6-year-old African-American and white girls who, you know, unrelated, but they were 6. And so it's not too far away from 5. And I think if we looked into more 6-year-old deaths, we might see more suicides. I have enough stories of 6-year-olds who have attempted suicide. And sadly, a prior suicide attempt is the strongest risk factor for suicide death. And so you see why suicide is not quite as, let's just talk about suicide. It's so multifaceted and one thing leads to the other and they're all interconnected. But I think if there's one thing we can do is to connect more relationship-wise. And that means if I'm an introvert and I get rejuvenated by my quiet time, then give it to me. And if I'm an extrovert and I get rejuvenated by people, then allow me. I was born an extrovert and I'd stand and talk to a random neighbor in a hot New York minute. And I just so excited. Yesterday, I did that with a neighbor. I liked his signs in his yard. One of them said, "Trans lives matter." And I was like, yes, because I have a son who's queer and I needed to have a conversation. So I've seen that sign for a while now. And then yesterday I saw him driving into his garage. So I crossed the street. I stood 6 feet apart. And I struck up a conversation and I got a new friend. But, you know, my wife would probably be like, oh my God, well, I'm so glad he has a sign in his yard, but I'm just going to keep walking the dog because for her, that's who she is. So if we just take a minute to get to know ourselves first and foremost, and then know each other. And so with my patients, what I do, well, first of all, the patient's parents, I use a mnemonic that I came up with and it's called TALK. And TALK really because the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention uses TALK Saves Lives as one of their hashtags. So I kept thinking to myself, how can I make this talk? Because I realized talk therapy really works better than any medicine. And so T stands for tuning in to the right radio frequency of your child or your neighbor or your wife or your kid. The little boy across the street from us, like literally catty corner that way in July, put a gun to his head in his house while his mother was home. She thought he was at work. My boys knew him. We had to talk about that because it had an effect on him. I didn't know him, but they knew him. So I started, you know, tuning into it. I said, dude, how are you doing with it though? How are you feeling about that? Because teenagers, adolescents have something called suicide contagion. Whereby, as you are a doctor, you know the word contagion. If there's a suicide in school and another suicide in the neighborhood, they will start thinking, maybe I should kill myself because he did it and she did it. And I'm in such a bad place. Suicide now might start looking like an option. And then there's something called a suicide cluster where you have a higher rate of suicides for a geographic location than the norm for them. The norm should be zero. But in San Antonio, Texas, in February of this year, we had a suicide cluster. We had 6 suicides between November and February. We had 6 that I know of aged 12 through 20. And one of them was a son of a pediatrician on Valentine's Day. And so that was why I said, I'm going to have a suicide prevention summit. Because maybe we all need to start in San Antonio, at least where I live. And so once you tune into the radio frequency of your child, you will know when your kid is not okay, your husband is not okay, your neighbor is not okay. Eyes will tell. And one thing that we have learned to do now is wear masks. And so one thing I've observed since I started, you know, since the COVID-19 is because we're wearing masks, we're forced to see each other's eyes. And your eyes will tell whether you're happy or sad or distressed if you really take time to look into my eyes long enough. And so that's one good thing that came out of wearing masks. Are we able to harness it though? And so when you tune into your child's radio frequency, you will know if your child is not doing okay. One night, I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I was crying because I had had a bad dream. I don't dream often, but in that dream, I was trying to reach across a big, huge divide to the sun at Stanford, and I just couldn't reach him, and he was trying to reach to me. And I told my wife, I said, I don't think he's here. There's something going on. And in the morning, I couldn't wait to call because he's 2 hours behind. He's in California. So at 7 o'clock, his time, finally I called. He picked up the phone and he was like, I'm burning up in a fever. I was like, that's why he came to me in my dream. And so I said, okay, I know you're grown, but I need you to go see the doctor. And as your mother, I know I don't need to know the details because, you know, you're an adult, but could she please give me a call? I just want to make sure that everything is okay because of my dream. And she called me and we talked. And so I need parents to tune into their kids like that. It takes a lot of practice, but it's doable. They say simple, but not easy, right? And so A stands for ask the questions. And the most important question you can ask your child is, what's happening? What happened? And never ask them why. Why is judgmental? Well, why are you cutting yourself? Well, because I want to cut myself. Then what do? What happened, son? What's happening at school? And then if you're going to ask questions, you must listen. So L is listen. And so T-A-L-K, and K means keep communication lines wide open as you get effective help for your child. And effective help doesn't have to be medications. Effective help could be, one of my patients' dad took him to Las Vegas after he attempted to hang himself for a daddy and son weekend. And that was effective. It doesn't have to be hospitalization. Most people who have killed themselves have seen a doctor within a month of their deaths. So seeing a doctor may not always be the answer. It could be a hike. It could be one thing I love to do, which is just dance. It could be just, you know, journaling, whatever is effective, plant a garden. My son my son that's in grad school now, he adopted a cactus from the previous person that rented the place. And for him, that's his little self-care, named the cactus and has a conversation with it. And when he called me on Sunday, he told me, and I keep saying he's a they, them. So when they call me on Sunday, they told me that, Mom, am I crazy talking to a cactus? I said, no. You know, I talk to all the plants in the house all the time. I don't have any plastic plants in the house. All my plants are alive and all of them are thriving. Why? Because I hang out with them. Yeah, I might be a bit cuckoo to some people, but it's called nurture. So I said, I promise you, your cactus is going to thrive, you know? And so whatever it is, there's effective help for them. It doesn't have to, it could just be just listening. Oh, Mom, I wish you would just listen to me more. Let me tell you one thing. I had a patient that I saw once that her mom brought me and said, I worked three jobs to put food on the table. She's so ungrateful. I need you to please just tell her that I'm doing my very best. And da-da-da-da-da, she's da-da-da-da. Then I asked the little girl, I said, okay, so what happened, right? And she said, I just want my mommy back. She works too long. She's always at work. But the mom was like, I'm working so hard for you. And she's like, I just want to spend some more time with you. So I didn't get the answer on the first day, but I'm just saying it does take just getting that trust factor and then just kind of uncovering it a little bit. And then the mom, so we just got them to do mom and daughter dates on Saturdays to go have their nails done or whatever moms and daughters do. I don't have a daughter. But don't you know who's blossoming and doing so well? The little girl who has been three times in the hospital for attempted suicide. I know you said, tell your story.
I've often said, I really admire you for all the work that you're doing in this field, because a lot of people would not take this on. You are such an incredible speaker as well. I know that you did a TED Talk recently.
I did.
And when you focus in on the camera, I was like, wow, you could teach people how to speak, in all honesty. But I know that the work that you're doing is so important. But consider that. Tell me, for those listening out there, well, there's a couple of things. If you were to go back in time and do this all over again, would you have changed anything?
I would have done it in 2000 when my friend killed herself. I would have zoomed in into the fact that she's 33 years old and the study said 10 to 34. Ironically, the study in 2017 was 15 to 24. Now it's extended to 10 to 34 for suicide as the second leading cause of death. So in less than 3 years, it's expanded by 10 years this way and that. It was 15 to 24 for a long time and now it's 10 to 34. 15 to 25, now it's 10 to 34. But I say this over and over again because that includes every single medical student and every single resident and some young attendings. So they are very, very high risk for suicide. So I think I would have, it's easy for me to say now that I ask, because no one's ever asked me that before, but it's easy for me to say I would have gone back and done it. But I don't know that I would have had the tools or been able to sell it even with just the one story. Even my patient that died, it didn't do it. But the seven-year-old that attempted woke me up. I was like, no, this. And of course, then I now leaned into my practice and I asked my nurse, I said, I feel like I see two or three depressed teens every day. She was like, try four or five. I was like, what? She was like, So I called it a doctor. I said, Dr. Molina, how many depressed teens do you see every day? He's like, I see about maybe a couple of months. I was like, no. He's like, yeah, about a couple of months. So then I was like, okay, is it me? Do I smell? Is there some kind of smoke in my head? Is there something? And then one of the patient's mom says, maybe you have a healing spirit. Maybe the kids. So, and I just took that and I said, you know what? So I wrote my very first blog for Kevin MD and it was semi-viral on little Kevin MD. It was like, I think it was called The Pediatrician Discovers Her Why. And my why was these kids, they come to me because I was meant to listen to them and just help them bridge the gap between them and their parents. And knock on wood, none of my patients have died since then. So maybe I'm doing something right. But I'm only one voice. I need people like you to accentuate the sound and make it bigger and multiply it, and we can all just take a minute and just reconnect with each other. This is what the COVID-19 I think has done for us. We may not know that, but I think in June there was a study that showed that for the first time Beijing saw their skyline. Beijing and LA saw their skyline for the first time in years. So it's a lot to say about the need to just do a hard stop and do some introspection and then go from a place of no. So if everybody can practice talking, where talking stands for T-A-L-K, with themselves and with their kids, and I think we should be good. But yeah, I think going back, I don't know that I would have done it better. I would have just maybe done it sooner, maybe.
Tell me, as far as somebody out there that may be listening that is actually contemplating suicide, what would you tell them? What advice could you give them right now?
Believe it or not, my second, I have a book that is finishing called What If My Child Is a Bully? But the book after that is called 100 Things to Do Before You Kill Yourself. I'm calling it Before You Jump, but that's what the jump means. I'll ask you specifically, go back and think about all the good things that you have done. Because what happens, and I'm glad you asked this question, what happens is our thoughts, we stack thoughts as humans. We tend to stack the negative thoughts more. So you have about 120,000 thoughts a day, 80% of them tend to be negative. The Native American proverb of the wolf you feed is the one that gets fat is real here. And so the more you feed, I know, because I kept feeding myself the thought that look at you, you're divorced. How dare you, like you're a Nigerian female, you're divorced. you know, that there's something wrong with you, because while I was married, I was made to believe that I wasn't good enough. Never mind that I'm a pediatrician and I owned my own practice, and I had 16 employees, and I started with one patient to 6,000 from one location to three locations. Never mind that. I believed that I was inherently not good enough. And of course, when you talk about childhood trauma, and I go back to when I was raped in medical school, and when I was assaulted as a 9-year-old, and when I was bullied in a school bus, yeah, you're not good enough. And so I want you to do the same thing that I did. I had to do a hard stop. First of all, I stopped taking the antidepressants. I'm not going to lie. Because what the antidepressants did for me was make me worse. But also, I couldn't feel anything. Now, that's not the same thing as feeling better. That just means you're numb. I don't want to be numb. I want to feel joy. I want to feel sad. They're opposites of each other. And Jay Shetty will tell you that crying uses the exact same muscles as laughter. But for some reason, one is okay and one is not. And so he teaches to cry if you have to. And so I'll ask you right now, that's thinking about killing yourself, to just write down 100 reasons why you should not. You'll be surprised. You might be at 120 by the time we're done. What I do for my patients, because they're young, they're teenagers, I ask them to call 5 friends and ask those 5 friends, what can I do? Dr. Lulu says to ask you, what can I do to make your day better? And 9 times out of 10, by the 3rd call, they are feeling better. Because the friend's like, oh my God, that's so nice of you. First of all, right? Now you feel nice. You're doing something for somebody. It's like, you know what? I had a rough day last week, but I'm okay today. Well, what happened last week? I want you to get them to open up for you so you can see that you are good enough for that person, because your mind is telling your amygdala, like Dr. Alana would say, your amygdala takes over and is in charge of fear and emotions and all the negativity and anxiety. So I want you to write down 100. My patients, I tell them to write 20. But I'm assuming you're an adult and you're maybe a doctor. Write down 100 and don't stop until you get to 100. You'll be surprised. And if you don't want to write, if you're not a writer, then do me a favor. Go to your room and fold your socks. And then fix your underwear drawer. Or, I don't know, if you are the eyebrow kind of person, do your eyebrows. Do something, because what abolishes that intent at that moment is intention of a goal. Like, there's a story of a guy who, I don't know, I can't remember what happened, but the bottom line is he was actively suicidal, because I think he lost his 2 legs and he was like an Olympic athlete or whatever. And his mom said, every single morning, write a goal and accomplish the goal. So write accomplishable goals, right? Start with 1. Folding up your socks drawer is easily accomplishable. And while you're folding up your socks, I want you to reminisce on the fact that when God created the earth, he looked at the work and he said it was good. God said it was good. And I'm not saying this because I'm a Christian, because actually I'm no longer as active as I used to be when I used to teach Bible study. But I do know that he looked at his work and said, it's good. He proclaimed you as wonderfully and wholly made. And whatever you're going through right now is temporary. But suicide is permanent. And yes, there'll be days when you'll feel worse, but there'll be days when you feel better. And I want you to hold on to those good days. And so I do guided meditations and I take them back to like their favorite place, which for me is the beach. And so go to the beach in your mind. And find some rare crabs or rare shells, or find something that's going to be like, oh my God, I can write a story about this in your mind, so you can unseat that mind. So that mindset, because there are 3 things you do. First of all, there's a thought that came in that made you say, okay, that's it, I'm done. So acknowledge the thought. That's the first A. Don't push it aside, because when you push it aside, you're stacking it. Acknowledge the thought. Let me see. I don't know. The last time I had a negative thought was when the Black Panther died. I was so sad. in my mind, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, you know, I felt like I knew him, that I could have done something to just help him feel better. And that was a thought that came, and it was not a very good thought, because I cried for like a day. But then the second thing is, after acknowledging the thoughts, you now analyze the thoughts. Is it true? So analyze for veracity, for truthfulness. Is it really true that I could have made him feel better? I didn't know him. He didn't know me. I really couldn't have made him feel better. So why am I telling myself this? You see what I mean? And then the third A is act based on the analysis that you just did. And so now what do? Someone just died that the whole world loved. My action is, I'm going to write a piece about him. And I blogged about him. That was my blog for last month. And then I cried for him. And then I let him go. Because you know what? There's other people out there who are still struggling that I can help. But that's just one example. But that's an example of how I do my three A's. You acknowledge that negative thought process. Acknowledge it for what it is. It's negative. And I usually tell the kids, I said, tell it to come in, but stay at the door. Don't give him a drink. Don't let him sit down. Don't let him get comfortable. Right there, say, okay, I see you. Okay, what you want today? Have a conversation with that thought. Write it down. And that takes you to your analysis. Okay, so I'm not good enough because the dinner that I cooked yesterday was a little too salty. Yeah, but I've cooked 25 million dinners that were great. So analyze that for truth. Most times you find out that only 8% of the negative thoughts are true. This is studies that have shown that. And then act. The other way to look at it is three R's. Recognize the thought for what it is, as a negative, intrusive thought. Reach out to someone. Maybe your wife, like I did. Maybe your friend. Maybe your coworker. I came home and I said to her, I said, I think I'm going to kill myself, because I had already tried that and I couldn't find an opening in the highway. It was the highway's fault that there was just no way I could. And then rise up. And rising up, you can physically get out of the space, because you know what? This house, this room right now is making me feel that I got to get out of here. Get out of your house. Or rise up from the thought process and do something else. So anyhow, you look at three A's or three R's is what I give my patients. And usually when you practice that, the more you practice, the better you're going to get at it. I don't know the last time I thought of anything bad about myself anymore. Because one day I went to see a doctor. I went to a doctor's office to talk about my practice and what I do for teenagers. And it was like the 11th. And I was like, this is the last one I'm going to go to. And I just asked to see the restroom. And then the lady said, oh, the restroom's over there. And I was dressed in, I can't remember what I was dressed, but I remember I wore high heel green suede shoes. I had them on. And nothing gives a woman power like the perfect pair of heels. And so I walked into the bathroom and I walked straight to the mirror and I winked and I said, girl, you're killing it. That was all I said to myself. I don't know where that came from. But to this day, that's been like over a year ago. I just bask in the fact that, yes, I'm killing it. If I can't represent myself enough, Sharon is not going to think I'm, you know what I mean? Like, no one else is going to think about it for me. So I want you to tell yourself that when I use the word killing it, please. I know it's kind of counterintuitive, but I mean, you're killing it, and like, you're good enough. You got this. So try the three A's, try the three R's. They're basically the same thing, and just go for it.
Tell me what's going on in the future. You have a course. Tell us about the course that you're offering. Any books?
Thank you. I think my books is what I'm just proud of. My fourth book, which is supposed to be the third book, is called What If My Child Is a Bully? It was supposed to come out this fall because, you know, it's kind of to coincide with school, but then we had the COVID, right? And so I didn't finish it. And instead I wrote my third book instead, which was this one, how to teach your children about racism because of George Floyd and all the drama about that. So right now I think I'm good. My most important next step is I'm planning a 3-day retreat for physicians, because I feel like even if I try to run, I can't hide from, did you hear about the people just they want to send me the pictures or the messages of the next physician that killed themselves. And so I feel like they trust me with the information for some reason. So why don't I do something with it? So now I just had one over the weekend, which was for regular people. But I think what I learned from that was we need to heal ourselves, and we're not able to. And so maybe a retreat, virtual, real, I don't know, but that thought came into my head. So that's where I am right now, for physicians to just kind of talk about suicide, like literally talk about suicide, because we don't want to talk about it, but we need to talk about it. And so I don't even know what it's going to be called. Maybe it's going to be called Physicians Talk About Suicide Comment. I don't know, but Sharon, we'll see. But so that's where I'm going right now. That's where I'm going. My course that I have is about book writing. It's about book writing. So it has really nothing to do with suicide in the sense, but it does help, because most people, when you start writing and journaling, you know, first of all, you think, oh, no one's going to read it. And then it becomes a bestseller, and then a double bestseller, and then a triple. And you're like, wait, me? So because of that, that's kind of how this whole thing was born, just being able to talk about it and then write about it. So I like to teach people how to write a book about nothing, but just start there, and you'll be surprised, that you surprise yourself during the journey. So
yeah. You have a lot to offer. So if people wanted to work with you directly online, say for instance they were out of your area, how do they reach you? Tell us about your website, the resources.
Yeah. So my cell phone is 802-768-1180. My patients have that number. It like literally rings on my phone. They have it because I have a direct primary care practice. I don't have a front office. I don't have a back office. It's just me, myself, and I. I know everybody that picks up the phone is like, wait, you're the doctor? I'm like, yes. I was like, I can just hear their minds like, I don't know about this. But the patient that went to Las Vegas with his father convinced me that I needed that. Because, you know, at one point you're like, I don't know, this is crazy. You know, my cell phone number. But he called me that day. He didn't call his mother. He didn't call his father. He called me, and he was screaming down the phone, Dr. Lulu, I need help. I need help. And the first thing I said to him, I don't know why, I just said, get out of the house. That's what I said. I said, get out of the house. I yelled it into the phone. And I got out of the house. I ran out of my house, somehow hoping to pull him with me. And then when I was outside, I said, okay, how soon can you get to my office? Because that's the beauty of a direct primary care practice. And it was like 15 minutes. I said, I'll see you in 15 minutes. I forgot that his parents had an appointment at 3 p.m. that same day. And so he came in about 3 minutes after his parents came in. And the first thing his mother said to me was, that's what she said. And so I asked the parents to wait outside. And I said, let me see your shirt. What's going on? He had fresh rope marks. And his mother noticed, as soon as he walked in the room, his mother noticed that he had fresh rope marks on his neck. So I think there's a lot to be said about being able to call and get a warm voice. But there's also a suicide text line. So you text any word at all to 741-741. They usually say text home or Steve, but now people know that if I'm texting that number, it's intentional. So you text any word you like, text help to 741-741. None of that is me. That's all national and intentional. But there's now a national suicide hotline, which is awesome. It's now 988. So whereas it was 911, it's now 988. For suicide specifically, as a veteran, I know the power of that number. Veterans kill themselves more than doctors do. So anyhow you look at it, I'm a high risk because I'm a Black female, divorced, single mom at one point, veteran, doctor. So if anybody could talk about suicide, it's the person who represents it in a dictionary, which is me. So 988 will get you there very fast. 741-741, you can text if you don't want to talk with teenagers like that. But for parents, I want you to download the Not Okay app. It's Not Okay. I have it on my phone for my kids. All they have to do is type, I'm not okay. What happens is with the app, you put in the names of 5 trusted adults in your child's phone. And all your child has to do is type in, I'm not okay. And sends a text to those 5 adults with your child's GPS location. So if your child is about to jump, you will know exactly what bridge. But more importantly, 5 trusted adults. But also the fact that the child typed, I'm not okay, means they really don't want to. See, that's the thing. People who kill themselves don't really want to die. They just want the pain to stop. And a lot of times is at this point, the pain is so much. So thank God we have 5 people on the way to come get you. Otherwise, my website is teenalive.com. So T-E-E-N alive.com. That was obviously intentional, the name of the website. But my practice is youthmotivationalspace.com. So people that want to see me as a patient. But Teen Alive is for speaking and for my books and all that. But if you honestly just type the word momatrician in your Google search, that's my registered trademark. It will bring everything about me, including my parents' home address in Nigeria. So I think the fastest way to get me is just type in the word the momatrician or momatrician, which is mom and pediatrician together.
It's been a pleasure. I feel very honored. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Female Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast. If you like us, please give us a nice review and tell your family and friends about us. We'll see you on another episode.